Yesterday we had a chance to get to know Rabbi Yehuda Halevi just a little bit and to begin to enter into the palace of the Sefer that is the Sefer HaKuzri, get some sense of how he organizes it. We met the key characters in the Sefer HaKuzri. We met the Melech HaKuzarim, the king, who is in a sense perhaps a metaphor for each of us, the person who's searching to find the right way, and searching to blend proper kavana with proper, or I should say, marry proper meisim to a proper kavana, which itself is an incredibly significant statement of the need to blend chovas ha-levavos and chovas ha-ivar, and the importance of what goes on in one's mind, one's heart, connected with the importance of what goes on externally, behaviorally, with one's mouth and one's hands. And we got a little taste of how it opens up. The Melech HaKuzarim, you remember his frightening dream, Havanas HaRetzuyah, Masecha Eina Metzuyim, and again and again and again until he begins to search and interviews a philosopher, interviews representatives of Christianity and Islam, and ultimately interviews the Chaver, the Talmud Chacham, who answers his questions ultimately with great satisfaction to the king, and that is the focus of Maimar Rishon. This is the initial conversation, a very long conversation between the Chaver and the king. Discusses Emuna, discusses the Kadosh Baruch Hu, discusses Mamar Har Sinai, Torah Min Shamayim. And then Mamar Sheni opens up. The curtain rises again. The king has the king went back to his country, and then he comes again to meet with the Chaver, with together with his number two, with his vizier, and they're very taken, and they ultimately they spend time with a community of Jews, and they learn, and they're misgayer, and then they come back to their country. They begin to teach quietly, and as things pick up, people are taken by Torah Hashem. So they begin to be more public. And ultimately, that's all the very beginning of Maimar Sheni. He brings the Rav, brings the Chaver to his country, and begins to teach. And then Maimar Sheni is really about Tanakh. Questions about Tanakh. Understanding different stories in Tanakh, about the language of Tanakh, and even some about the Diktuk and other topics that fall under sort of that general rubric of now we're learning Tanakh. Someone's like, that's, you know, the first lesson, Maimar Rishon, was about Emunah. The second lesson is, let's learn Tanakh, and approaching Tanakh from many different angles. Question, shoot.
I know there are generally no questions on like the level, I said, but did it matter that he had to at first teach it quietly if he was the king?
That's an interesting point. I think it's safe to assume that that in this, even if to the extent that this is historical fiction, but Rabbi Yehuda Halevi, I think it's safe to assume Rabbi Yehuda Halevi has messages, true messages he's trying to convey using the device of literary fiction. One can guess, for example, the dream that the king has beginning of Maimar Rishon, one would guess is again, like I was saying before, the recognizing the need to blend Kavana and Meisim. Perhaps in part a retort to people who are over rationalist and think it's over metaphorical. It's all just ideas and not about meisim. So it could be Levi maybe responding to that. So no. The first lesson of the sefer is that Kadosh Baruch Hu expects kavana and meisim. Just kavana alone is not good enough. So it could be that in terms of Maimar Sheni, it could be it's a lesson, you're right, it could be the fictional beginning, maybe a literarily delivered lesson about how to engage in chinuch. Chinuch of others or chinuch of oneself. It has to be step by step. In a way that you have to play the long game and know what your goal is and figure out how you can convey things in an effective way. And often doing things gradually is the best way for things to actually be absorbed well and deeply and to stick. Yeah. Definitely possible. And now we're going to turn our attention right now to Maimar Shlishi. And if you have a safe first, you're going to want to look at the beginning of Maimar Shlishi, Gimel Aleph. If you have the packet in front of you, of the Rabbi Genizi edition. So it's page 162, 163. And as I mentioned, the very end, if you have the same, you can flip to the previous page, the very, very close of Maimer Sheni, which would be Maimer Sheni Os Pe Aleph. The Kuzri sort of wraps up the second Maimer by saying, this is wonderful, this is lovely, you've done enough that I even love the language. In our conversation, at the very end of Maimer Sheni, talking about the Hebrew language, about Diktok, he says, I'm now am I taken by Tanakh, I'm even taken by the language, the presentation of Tanakh, and now I want to talk about something else. We've discussed Tanakh for a while, now I want to turn my attention, he says, to Toar HaOved Elokim Eslechem. How do you Jews understand what an Eved Hashem, an Oved Elokim, ought to look like? And again, there's a certain logical progression. We first spoke about Emun and Tarmah Shemayim, that was Maimer Rishon. Maimer Sheni was now, the first sefer we're going to learn is Tanakh. Tanakh from many different angles. And now Maimer Shlishi is, okay, so now that I've learned some of the basics, let's get practical. I wanted to describe, I want to be an Oved Elokim. What's a Jewish understanding of what an Eved Hashem, an Oved Elokim, look like? And then after that, I'm going to want that the other things that come over the course of my Mishlishi, I want to understand how you respond to the Karaya, I want to understand how you respond to certain other questions. But so the way he sets the stage at the very end of my Mishlishi for my Mishlishi is the first major question, which is the question that we're going to be discussing in our learning of Kuzri, is what does it mean to be an Oved Elokim? And central, one of the central axes we're going to see, it's going to take a couple pages for us to get to it, but we're going to be saying stage also for understanding specifically the role of tefillah. And the Kuzri is going to have a lot to say in two different spots in Maimer Shlishi about tefillah, but sort of tefillah in the big picture, and then getting involved in the nitty-gritty details with a Ruhani perspective, and like what are you doing, what are you accomplishing, why do we say this? But it's all within a larger framework of what does it mean to be an Eved Hashem? And certainly, a great question, a very important question, let's just spend time with. Zach?
Isn't the answer to that question different to the different sects of Judaism? Or from different people?
To an extent. As we saw, we learned in Seals of Sharma earlier in the year, at the very, very end of Seals of Sharma, all the mamash, the last page, Perek Havav, he writes, I've given you a klalim. I've given you the course of these, the 26, 27 prakim, 26 plus the Hakdama. I've given you the principles of different stages and phases and growth in Avodas Hashem. There's, of course, details. We could go on details forever because each person is different. Each person is different situation, different people, different personalities. He writes to different people, different jobs. He says the famous line that has not always survived editors, where he says, you know, you can, the details of how one gets to these goals. The goals are common goals. The details of how one gets to the goals are going to depend a lot on station in life and the career you're in. And he says, but the goals are the same, and the goals are attainable regardless. And he has a line where he sounds like he says, there's even one who's learning all day and all night can attain those same madrigas of in Avodas Hashem that can be attained by a person who works for a living.
Right. Does it add it up because of the former or the latter?
It may have just been well-meaning editors who thought there must be a mistake here. But that's the original line. So that's certainly true. And obviously, it's always going to be a blend of the Torah is eternal, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu has certain immutable, eternal, universal expectations of us, values, and specific behavioral expectations. In other words, behavioral expectations meaning Tariq Mitzvahs. And the values that are the time of Dekra, the philosophy of Halacha that is being expressed by and through the mitzvahs. But how a particular people go about doing it is going to vary from person to person. And there is certainly room for different flavors, but clearly, the fact that different drach of Avodas Hashem doesn't mean there are different sets of Tariq mitzvahs for different people. But there's going to be a lot. And what's fascinating, actually, coming to, as you open up Maimer Shlishi, is Yehuda Levi seems to have been an incredibly positive person. And don't be thrown by the fact that he begins by telling us first what an Oved Hashem is not. Just like when a couple weeks ago, we opened up the second part of Emunah B'Tochen by the Chazon Ish, remember he began by telling us what B'Tochen isn't. B'Tochen is not, you know, how it's commonly misunderstood. Instead, here's what the real beautiful B'Tochen. He's also going to start, it's going to take him some time to get there. And in the opening of Maimer Shlishi, there is a certain parallel to a generation later, where the Rambam writes in the third parak of, and the number is probably coincidental, the third beginning, the third parak of those days. So the Kuzri writes as follows. Again, I'm going to read. I see some guys brought their own Kuzri, so I'm going to read you're looking at the sheets, the right side of the page is the traditional Ibn Tibbon translation. If you prefer to follow along with the original, it's great. If you have your own Feldheim or some other edition you want to follow in the English, that's fine too. Or if you want to follow along in the copies in the book that I gave out on the left side, which is the re-edited, adapted into modern Hebrew version, by Rabbi Ganizi, that is all fine. Amar Achaver, Gimel Aleph. Amar Achaver, so the Rav, the Talmud Chacham, speaks to the Melech HaKuzarim. He said, you want to know about the approach of an Oved Hashem, minhag ha'Oved etzlenu, the approach of Oved by us meaning by us Orthodox Jews, not by the Karaites, not by the Christians, not by the Muslims, einenu nigzar min ha'olam. He's not cut off from the world. That's the first thing Rav Levi wants to tell us. You want to know what Avodas Hashem is? Let me first tell you, it does not mean extreme asceticism. We're not, monks are not the Jewish ideal. Shelo yiyeh l'masa, and fasting, why? He says, this is the first thing I have to tell you. You know what Jews are? We don't believe in asceticism. We don't believe that the ideal is to live in a monastery and be cut off from the world. When you do that, says the real Levi, this is, I think, a very counterintuitive answer. When you do that, then life becomes a drag. If you live a hyper-ascetic life, life becomes annoying. Life becomes miserable. Life becomes unpleasant. And you're going to not appreciate the life. You're not going to be interested in the life, which is really mitovah sabore. Life, years in this world, is one of the great gifts of HaKadosh Baruch Hu to human beings. Arguably one of the greatest gift. To adopt a lifestyle which is going to make me not appreciate the gift of life that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave me. That doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make sense. This life, which is mitovah sabore, zocher tovah so alav bahem. Kadosh Baruch Hu tells us that this is, it's clear in the Tanakh, clear in Chumash, that this is a gift. That's Bispaya Mecha Amale, the Harach the Yamin. Now you see, really, this is such a basic idea. It's pretty clear in Chumash. If you needed proof, it's pretty clear in Chumash that the Torah believes that life is a good thing. We are pro life. Not in the, that may be true as well, but in the most basic sense, we are pro life. We believe that life is a great, for a human being to have years in this world, it's a great matana from Kadosh Baruch Hu. Ohev ha'olam, arichas hayamim, mipnei shu makneh ha'olam haba. And not just because life here is good, but we see life is an incredible gift because life is a vehicle. Life here, years in this world, are a vehicle to olam haba. B'chol she yosif tova, yalam adregel olam haba. Again, in just a couple of words, putting together the ideas that we saw centuries later, Mesillas Yesharim develops, the beginning of Perek Aleph. Again, it's already centuries earlier than Ruah Levi, Mishnayos in Pirkei Avos, it says, Baruch Hu gives you time in this world, an incredible gift, a gift not only because of what it is right now, but where it can get you to. And the more good you do here, Yala Madrigal Al Mahaba. That's incredible. He says, okay, that's number one. We believe, we embrace this world. This world is a gift from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We don't think that Kadosh Baruch Hu would be nasty to us by putting us into this evil world we have to run away from. No, we see this world as an incredible gift. To adopt a lifestyle, an attitude, which is going to make me miserable, and he's going to unpack that later on, marvelously. What do I mean that to be a hyper-ascetic is going to make me miserable? He says, now Real Levi says, hold on for a moment, says Real Levi. It is true that there have been a few people over the course of human history, over the course of spiritual human history, who have been in such a rare, unusual madrega that maybe they were living in a different way. But he's going to explain that in the next couple of lines and explain, but that's entirely irrelevant to the vast majority of Jews, people in general, and it's entirely irrelevant in our generation. So let's see what he says. He gives the exception and explains why it's not relevant. Again, and again, just in terms of organization, stop for a moment to the sidebar. And what I told you, Sefer Kuzri is a conversation. So he's giving the exception before he gives the rule. He's not sort of starting very methodical. The Rambam is like, let's give the rule, let's give the principles, then we'll get to the exceptions, we'll lay everything out like a logical treatise. Sefer Kuzri is a conversation. Got to keep going. And then ultimately look back and everything hangs together. It says, we're not into, we don't see asceticism as ideal. It's gonna make a person be unhappy that he's alive. That can't be what a Kodesh Baruch Hu wants. Can't be. It doesn't make any sense. That's what a Kodesh Baruch Hu wants. Maybe we should adopt a lifestyle where we don't appreciate Rishon Lezion. He says, Chanuch. For a person to wish he was reading Olam Haba, yeah, if you're in the Madriga of Chanuch, Shne'emar bo, b'ishalech Chanuch es ha'alokin. Chanuch was, in this world, he was already walking with a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Whatever that means, that's obviously a metaphor. Kadosh Baruch Hu doesn't have hands and feet. He's not walking literally, physically, side by side with God. But he's already living in Olam Haza in a different way. He's already living with a Roshel. Therefore, yeah. Oh, my drink is El Yehoz Achor Lecha. Yeah, if you're the Madriga of El Yehoz Novi, so a person like Chanuch, again, this is sort of like, not exactly ridiculous and absurd, but this is sort of saying, what you're saying is true if you're like Chanuch, if you're like Eliyahu, so then it makes sense to want to be totally alone. You know why? You know what's going to happen? He says, if you're Eliyahu Navi, if you think about in Tanakh, Eliyahu Navi is one of the most famous example of a hermit. Right? For a while, Hitaka runs away from civilization. He's in the cave, but Kodesh Baruch Hu sends him food with the birds miraculously. He says, in the Hanami, Eliyahu Navi Taka did separate himself from society for a while. That was an appropriate part of his Avodas Hashem. Yeah, he says, you know why? He, instead of being with people, he had company. He wasn't alone. He just didn't have anyone company. He had angelic company. Okay? A person's living with Malachim, so then it makes sense. I need to get away from people so I can spend time with my social circle, my holy social circle of Malachim. Very fascinating. He says, you're not going to be alone. You're not going to be lonely. Heim tzavasel. He has company. But his company is just not human. His company is malachim. V'yishtomein b'malo'an. Such a person. Yeah, if you're Eliyahu Navi, says the real lady, yeah, then Yitaka will be unhappy in human company because you're missing out on the other company that you want. You're not able to access the type of experience there with the real Malach. To be mamish plugged into Malach Shemayim, not needing food and drink. Which, again, the real lady is pointing out deftly. It's true that Eliyahu Navi is described in the state of Malachim as seeking solitude and seeking a type of a hermit-like reality for a while. He also describes Sefer Malachim as not needing to eat for weeks on end. So yes, for Eliyahu was appropriate. Eliyahu was living a Malach-like existence. So such a person will want to be alone from other people. And he even did that as a Chiddush. He says it's conceivable that the person like Chanuch or Eliyahu, again, a few people of the course of human history, actually already summited. He says Eliyahu summited spiritually. There was nothing more for him to accomplish as a human being on Hazeh. Chanuch, says the real lady, he had summited, he reached the top, there was nowhere to go, no further up to go. It's okay. So he was ready to go to Olam Haba. Okay. That's pretty. Yeah. That itself is an interesting fetish. That's conceivable that any human being could have summited, reached his full potential, there's nothing more to accomplish. That itself is a significant fetish of Yehuda Levi. He says, yes, we're talking about two people so far over the course of human history. And then he goes on to say, philosophers, with whom Yehuda Levi has a certain degree of respect, but also a certain degree of hesitancy. He already dealt with the philosophers at the very, very beginning. Philosopher was the first person whom the Melech HaKuzarin had spoken with, and he was not, there was certain things he liked, but there was plenty they didn't like. But Chacham HaMispalsifim, people who were philosophized, they also enjoy aloneness. Why? They want to just think. They want quiet so they could think and develop ideas and come to certain conclusions, philosophical conclusions. So people who are searching, philosophers are searching for philosophical truth, will want peace and quiet so they could sit and think. And at the same time, you want also some time when you meet with students, you want to have conversations with the young intellectuals that will get you thinking, that will get you analyzing, that will get the mind going. He said, perhaps you think this is a couple of centuries, like 5 centuries after Levi, you think of the way they describe Isaac Newton at Oxford. He had this like little, he had a location chair in mathematics at Oxford. And apparently he had like this little garden, like this solitary garden where he could just sit, like from his apartment. I believe they write it wasn't maybe still there, wasn't accessible from the outside. And he had to go through his apartment, whatever it was, to get into the garden. So he could just sit and think and ponder and develop calculus and develop classical mechanics. Walking around his garden thinking quietly for hours in it. At the same time, he'll go see students sometimes and teach classes and have conversations. He says, okay, so Rabbi Levi says, so far I see 2 groups of people who do well to have lots and lots and lots of alone time. Either if you're Isaac Newton, you're a Miss Palsafe philosopher, which again, Rabbi Levi has a certain degree of respect for, but he is not implying that this is what he would recommend. And he says, or if you're the spiritual madriga of Chanoch and Eliyahu, and it should be noted, and he's going to come back to this, the dangers of loneliness, and the fact that loneliness makes you sad. And he stressed before subtly but clearly, says Chanoch and Eliyahu, they weren't lonely either; they also had company. It just instead of human company, they had malachim for company. Sort of saying, yeah. If you could also go for like Eliyahu and Navi for 40 days and 40 nights without food, and when you're alone in a cave, the Malachim come to talk with you, so then maybe being a hermit is appropriate for you as well. This is clearly not what we recommend in general, or more than a few times over the course of thousands of years, as he's going to say soon. And then he goes on to say, thinking about this like Isaac Newton philosopher picture, Isaac Newton was a mathematician and physicist as well, In medieval times, that was all part of what they would call philosophy. He says, but when you think about that, he has an interesting analogy. He says, the mathematician, the philosopher, the physicist who wants to just be alone for hours on end and then spend some time with students and go back to solitary thought, Kamisha, what's that like? Kamisha shagga b'kibbutz hamon, someone who's crazy about making money. Like single-minded, meshugel darachet. It's all about money. He has no interest. The guy is living and breathing money. He's living and breathing finance. He's living and breathing real estate. He's living and breathing whatever his line is. He has no interest in spending time with anyone unless they can make him money. It's all about money. He doesn't want to spend time with his wife. He doesn't want to spend time with the kids. It's like caricature. Sometimes has a lot of truth to it. He doesn't know his old friends, his buddies, like, it's all money. So if time with you is not going to make me money, it's all about that financial bottom line. That's the way I'm going to assess everything. Time with you, is it worth it? I don't know. Is it worth it? Right, how much am I going to make off a half hour of meeting with you? Are you going to pay me for it? Or is it going to open up networking and business opportunities? If so, great. If not, I have no interest in talking to you. He says, okay, you have this single-minded philosopher who is not seeking cash, but seeking abstract philosophical truth, so that may be true that he will sacrifice he will sacrifice the value of being with people in order to accomplish his one single-minded goal. Okay, you'll accomplish your goal. You're obviously going to, the guy who gets rid of, who loses his whole circle of friends because of his quest for money, he may make a lot of money, but he's obviously going to pay a very severe cost that's not measured in dollars and cents. And he says, and that's the madriga of Socrates. Socrates, not Domolo. But he says, Eli Yechidim. Ain't tikva la'agil madrega samata. There's no way that you're going to get to the madrega. Hanoch, Eliyahu, maybe even mean Socrates. He says, you know when you have something like this? Let's sort of step it down a little bit. Again, let's not lose track of his basic thread. You want to know what he says to the Melchak Uzarim, what it means to be an Obed El-Kim? Number one, understand, we don't believe in monkhood. We're not looking for cutting yourself off from society. You'll tell me, you open say from Allah and you still have Eliyahu Navi. He says, yeah. Eliyahu Navi is extremely rare. He wasn't alone. He wasn't lonely. He was spending time with his... Okay. He says, we can notch that. That's entirely irrelevant. He says, we can notch it down a little bit. There is a lower level of aloneness that does seem to be looked at positively in the Tanakh. V'himatzei ha-shechina be'eretz ha-kedosha ba'am ha-muchon l'nevuah. Back in the days, when you A, in the right place, Eretz Yisrael, B, the right time in Jewish history, ba'am ha-muchon l'nevuah, when the Jewish people were on the Madrega to be ready to receive, to have Nevim among them, okay? And then, at the right time, the right place, ha-anoshim nefradim. There were people who would separate themselves somewhat from society. Shofnim b'midbaros would spend time living in the desert. Mischabrim emisha dom elahem. Lo hoi b'zbodim l'gam. He says, even they, people preparing for the war, they weren't totally alone. They had a community of like-minded people. Misha dom elahem. Not b'zbodim day l'gam. They weren't alone. Arhoi ne'ezarim al chachmas ha-torah u-ma'aseha ha-mekarlu me'madrigahim b'kdush v'tarah. They are the B'nai HaNavim. Every once in a while in Tanakh we reference to the B'nai HaNavim. Literally, the children of Navim. Doesn't mean the Navim's kids. It means the Navim, Banim Eimim HaTalmidim. It means Navim's students, people who were training, Navim in training. A person was in a certain Madrega of Limud HaTorah, of Tikkun HaMidos, the right type of person, so he could enter, in our yeshiva we have, the regular smicha program, then you have Yad Niyad smicha. So once upon a time, Kali Yisrael had, a Nevuah program. You were on the Madrega, where you would, you get a tap on the shoulder, and can you imagine, like Chagai tapping you on the shoulder, or Yishayahu tapping the shoulder and say, we'd like you to join us. Can you imagine that? Okay, so in Hanami, he says, you're right, in Tanakh you will find the B'nai HaNavim. Read by Eliyahu and Elisha and B'nai HaNavim are off on the side. So, right, they will have their own yeshiva, perhaps out of the big city. That's true. But these A, weren't totally alone. B, these were people already at a certain point. And through Torah and mitzvahs, were seeking this madrega of Nevuah. Ach bezman hazeh, v'makam hazeh, v'ha'am hazeh. But in this period of time, where we're at now, in the place where we live now, we're not even in Eretz Israel, and the state of the nation, very far from being ready for Nevuah, ain chazon nefratz, there is no Nevuah. Emir ha-chachma k'nuya v'hedra ha-chachma hi ha-tivis. We don't have enough, neither natural understanding, which may be reference to philosophy, nor to the received, the developed chachma Nevuah. So nowadays, is mishehichnis atzmul hinazer b'prishas. A person decides that he wants to be a monk, he wants to be a hermit, he wants to be, or even not right away totally, but he wants to throw himself into a life of prishas and asceticism. Kehichnis nasha b'yisurim v'chali nafshi v'gashmi. All you're doing is sign up for a miserable life. Fascinating. V'tira alav dalos acholim. He'll be impoverished, broken, sick. People may think, that he's, he looks like that because he's on such a high madriga. But he's really a nasar. He's in prison. He's going to start not appreciating, not enjoying life. He won't be happy with the fact that he's alive. How could it be otherwise? He's not Dalek Bar Eloki. She must have go Sabbath's kingdom. Come back to the point you made before. Yeah, a person's a Navi. So then, when he's alone, he's not alone. He's spending time with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. Okay. He's okay. Again, it's because the primary argument here. We're not pro-loneliness. Lonely man of faith, notwithstanding. We're definitely, loneliness is not something that you're seeking out. If you're Eliyahu HaNavi, when you go to the cave, you're spending time with Malachim, you're not so lonely. Or you're on the Madrega, you're at a time and place, and personally, in a place where you can really have Nevuah, okay? Then you won't be alone. You'll be getting message from Rebbe Shalom. But the real lady says, you and I, and this is close to 1,000 years ago, so certainly you and I, this is entirely irrelevant. This man is there, it says, even once upon a time, this is only for very few yechidim, and again, never with loneliness. It says, Bizman Azeh, it's silly. It says, it's a silly. You're just not gonna be happy. It's incredibly important to seek, not always gonna happen, but when seeks to be, Rosh wants us to be happy with our life. And he goes on to say, you don't have the company with HaKadosh Baruch Hu that Navi has. You don't have the enjoyment of wisdom that the philosopher might have. Yare v'chassid ohev shivke lokav v'vididos amid at p'nyat tefillah. He says, you're not going to appreciate it. You're not going to enjoy the learning. Over time, for the person tries to come to the top of the world, he's not going to find satisfaction in his davening. He's not going to find satisfaction because Kadosh Baruch Hu created us to want certain things. The Yishayah Be'itne Hayom will close with the end of Os Aleph. Don't take questions. Ba'alayla Be'nashik is the end of Bekamach Osash and Itba'alayim. Because a person denies himself normal living, it doesn't work. The Kadosh Baruch Hu built you to want and need certain things. May Hashem have our Iyabah deeper basic. Number one, just in social interaction. You know, to talk to people and to have conversations. And the Echila Shdiya, the Mishkal. And for people built to want to eat and drink and to want to have sexual activity with one's wife properly. Now, Revach B'mamon, people naturally want to support themselves and make money. Takanas Beisam, take care of your home. Ezra's Dalim, the Ezra Tarabono. And people are fascinating. People have a natural need to help others. That's actually also a very subtle but fascinating one. It says, you're denying your natural need for conversation and social interaction. You're denying your natural need for normal food and drink. You're denying your natural need to not be celibate. You're denying your natural need to make money. And you're denying your natural need to get stuck. Isn't that fascinating? It's like a need. Part of that, and then not a physical need, not like your belly is empty, but a psychic need. Like you don't have a physical need for conversation, but the way Akash Bahu built us as social animals, as psychologically, we need conversation. And we need also to help others. That's fascinating. That's a need. You're going to be alone, you're not going to help other people. He said, you're not going to be happy. You show me scharetam, ashakash and ashrela. You're not going to succeed in the last line. You're not going to succeed, Bizman Azeh, in getting any closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu through cutting yourself off from the world. And you're just going to be upset and frustrated. And you're frustrating the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu built you as a person. So this is his very long answer to the question. You want to know what Ovid Elokim is? Let's just recap. He said, first let me tell you what Ovid Elokim is not. Ovid Elokim is not a monk. We're not Christians. We do not believe that fundamentally Olam Hazeh is bad and we should seek to run away from it as much as possible. Adirabba, and that's sort of the subtext here, is that Christian understanding that Olam Hazeh is fundamentally bad. It relates to their view of sexuality, it relates to the view, their interpretation of the Eitz Hadas story, and it expresses itself in this notion that a priest ought to be celibate. And the muvcharim among the priests are going to be not only cut off from sexual activity, but really cut off from the world entirely, monks. He says, we don't buy that. Yes, in very, 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 very rare circumstances, there may be value to that. Chanoch, Elio, B'nai Nevi'im, to an extent, but there they weren't cut off from people entirely. And Bechlal, he said, throughout, it's never about being alone. It's just about, is my company human, or am I one of those few people in human history where my company is being malachim instead? Okay, so this is utterly irrelevant to us. Kadosh Baruch Hu wants us to be enjoy. I said we should recognize, and that was the point he made at the beginning. And it's important to stress it, because he did. Rabbi Levi did. We see from the Tanakh, we see from the Chumash, that life is a present, that life is a gift. So it stands to reason that the lifestyle Kadosh Baruch Hu wants us to engage is one that will help us to feel what a gift life is. That we're going to be happy to be alive. And if you're going to lead a lonely life and a celibate life, the kavana, the person is going to choose to do that, to then and be cut off from people and cut off from society and cut off from all the normal, from meeting one's own normal psychological needs. It's one's own psychological needs are nothing to be embarrassed of. That's part of his opening argument. It can't be. Obviously, in Os Beis, Sefer Melech HaKuzar says, okay, so what is? Now you're telling me what an Oved Hashem is not. Tell me what it is. And we see tomorrow, he has a very, very, very surprising answer. Because when he does answer the question, Os Gimel, it seems at first like he's answering the wrong question. He discusses something that seems to have nothing to do with the Avodas Hashem. We'll pick up with that tomorrow. Questions? You guys have been very patient.
Didn't they say that
O'Connor
never smiled or something like that?
See, supposedly they say he smiled twice. Whatever that means. I mean, or at least the Talmidim noticed him smiling twice.
How does that work with this?
That's a great question. I mean, what you're saying is that one of the layers of this first piece of Maamar Gimel is the incredible importance of Simcha. Now, he didn't yet use the word Simcha, but he's saying like Simcha has a life that's going to generate a lack of Simcha needs rethinking. Right, I'm not sure that everyone always. The Vilna Gaon is reported as having said by a report by Rechaim Volozhin, I believe, and how Sefer Kuzari is mamish kulo emes and kulo tov, and like, this is Maja, a beautiful presentation of authentic Jewish thinking. There certainly have been people who have not followed everything the Kuzri said, and maybe didn't agree with everything the Kuzri said. Personally, it definitely it resonates with me.
So it's not like
there definitely were people who did not see Simcha as an important. Either didn't see Simcha Veshita as an important part of their Avodas Hashem, or just didn't do Simcha. Or maybe different people expressed their Simcha differently. Maybe he was very satisfied. I don't know. I never spoke to Rav Chanan. Maybe he was very satisfied with his life, and it didn't involve smiling. Different people have different ways of expressing their emotions. I'm not sure. The Avnei Nezer, Slachachal Rebbe, in his Sefer Egle Tal, there's a Sefer Avnei Nezer, which is Truvus on Kol Targula, and he has a Sefer Egle Tal, which was supposed to be about Tal, Lamatas Malachas, and he never got past the first 11. And his very, very famous Hakadama. In the Hakadama, he discusses what he believes is a misconception. He says there are people who believe that if you learn Torah and you enjoy it, and you get geshmak out of your learning, it's not as good a learning. Because it's not lishma. You're learning because you enjoy it. You're learning because of geshmak. Torah shalal lishma. Avnei Nezer says there are those who believe that you're a bigger tzaddik if you don't enjoy your learning. You're just like, you don't enjoy it. You do it because Hashem said so, even though it's annoying and makes you miserable, but you learn because you're supposed to. And Avnei Nezer goes on to argue extensively that that is absurd. He says it's not true that the enjoyment of doing a mitzvah is a specific of Limud Torah makes a Shlo Lishma. The Adrava says that's part of a Torah Lishma. I'm told, I never saw this inside, a friend of mine, Shmuel Mayberg, told me that that array appears in, I think, Rabbeinu Avram in Ahar, or the Rishonim of Provence in his Chidushim on the Dharm. Mitzvah Slav HaHasnet, no, he apparently has that idea as well. That maybe not, I'm not sure if it's expressed as explicitly as by Avnei Nezer, but that the Hana of mitzvahs, the Hana of not ulterior hana. The enjoyment, the satisfaction of doing the mitzvah, satisfaction of learning, is part and parcel. Okay? So the Avnei Nezer definitely aligns, I think you're saying, well, with the overall approach of the Sefer HaKuzri. That you're saying is, of course, it makes a lot of sense. If one understands that Kadosh Baruch Hu gave us life and wants us to enjoy it, Kadosh Baruch Hu wants us. The ideal is that doesn't mean every single time you're going to enjoy doing the mitzvah. And let's be clear, Sefer Kuzari is not saying, if it doesn't feel good, don't do it. Like, don't do a mitzvah unless you enjoy it. If you don't enjoy it, it must not be a mitzvah. That's not, he's not saying like, on like a line-by-line, event-by-event basis. Everything has to feel good. Everything has to make you happy. But sort of like, what's the overall picture? It can't be the overall picture is one that's destined to, the overall picture of what Avos Hashem is supposed to be like universally. I may be in a situation where, for me, it's going to be very difficult. But it has to be that the overall universal definition of Avos Hashem has to be something that, in general, will in the long run result in not only happiness in Olam Haba, but happiness in Olam Hazeh as well. One last question.
Chanuch and Yoyo also, they like summited and there was no more room for growth. And it's one of them.
In the Hanami, it says in Tanakh, they were taken from this world in very remarkable ways. This is part of why he's talking about those two. Eliyahu goes up Rich Ve'ish. And Chanoch Ve'inenu, a very mysterious pasuk, Ve'inenu kil kachas elokim. So he's, Yehuda Levi is saying, yeah, those were incredibly unique situations where someone had was summoned, and then, okay, and then there was no reason for him to be in this world. There's nothing left for him to do. It's hard to even imagine. And I think they did that be a chesh Yehuda Levi. Yeah, so then a Kodesh Baruch Hu whisked him straight to Olam.
So that was
it wasn't even a normal process of death. It was just like, you're done. It wasn't the Gezeira to Adam and Chava. This was, you completed the job. Now move on. Unusual. Okay. Okay. It would be interesting to see, to look at the other Rishonim on Tanakh. I will say, as we close the Svarim, when you learn Sefer HaKuzri in context of other Rishonim, so one way of looking at Kuzri in the context of other Rishonim is looking at other Bali Machshava. You look at the Rambam in Hilchos Deos, the Rambam in Mor Nebuchadnezzar, Rambam in other writings, other Sefer Machshava, Ben Bachai, and so on and so forth. You go look at Rabbeinu Yonah on Mishlei, on Avos, on in Shari Tshuva, Sefer HaYira. But there's another sort of dimension to compare and contrast in the Kuzri, and that is with the Rishonim on Tanakh, the Perushim on Tanakh, specifically the Ibn Ezra, with whom he had contact, certainly, and who, like the Kuzri is writing on Machshav, but he's also writing on Tanakh. There's a lot of writing on Tanakh going on in the Sefer Kuzri. So it'll be interesting to see how do other Rishonim deal with that pasuk by Chanoch, and how do other Rishonim deal with that passage by Eliyahu HaNavi. To see, is he saying what they're saying? Is he disagreeing? Did we show him before? Did we show him after? Yeah, it's an interesting question.